Hello, Low Country. This is longtime ESPN commentator Dr. Jerry Punch, inviting you to listen to the Scott Hamilton Show every day right here on 98.9 ESPN Charleston. Because as everyone knows, Scott is a legend in his own mind.
Welcome back. The optics are awful. I mean, he leaves right as they're on the cusp of possibly making the college football playoff. That's the goal, allegedly, of every coach, of every player. You go to win a championship.
Right.
But before you can win a championship, you have to play for a championship. And before you can play for a championship, you have to position yourself to be selected. And they're close. They're right there. But again, it's a business. And you have to do what's best for you. And I get that. And I'm also thinking that players are becoming more tolerant now. It's not like the old days where they would be so bitter and I can't believe he left and all that. Still, though, I'm sideways if it's me because they are in position. If they were going to the Liberty Bowl or the Gasparilla Bowl, the Weed Eater Bowl or whatever, and he takes off, you know what? That's cool. Whatever, dude.
Yeah. Jimmy Kimmel Bowl. Fine.
Exactly. Well, now that sounds kind of boss. I wonder what a swag bag for that is. But you get my point. It's the playoff.
Right.
Playoff. Yeah, but it's serious. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
I would be sideways. I don't know. I'm not playing now. I'm old. We had leather helmets when I played. So. Joining us now to say Tama Hotline, he played quarterback for three seasons at Notre Dame, including a season in which he was the only FBS quarterback to lead his team to wins over four ranked opponents. Now he's an entrepreneur who is revolutionizing the NIL game. Brandon Wimbush, welcome to the Scott Hamilton Show.
Scott, thanks so much for having me.
Brandon, appreciate you coming on, big guy. And, you know, you're a former Notre Dame quarterback. You played for the Fighting Irish. You played for Brian Kelly, recruited by Brian Kelly, I presume. Did you see this coming?
No, I didn't. I was recruited both by Brian Kelly and Matt LaFleur, so that's a pretty cool story, head coach of the Green Bay Packers today. I didn't see this coming. And I also thought he had a contract that extended him throughout the mid-2020s. But like you said earlier in the conversation, you got to do what's best for you, right? This is a business at the end of the day. And his salary was being doubled. And, you know, the job gets a little bit easier from a talent perspective. So can't blame him, right? But obviously it's a tough blow for the Notre Dame community.
It just looks poor to me, Brandon, and I get it. You have to do what's best for you, but because Notre Dame's sitting there at number six with an opportunity to go to the playoff, if they were in a conference, and Trent actually asked me this question last segment, if Notre Dame was in a conference, if they were playing for a conference championship this weekend, do you think Brian Kelly leaves, or do you at least think it goes down differently?
No, I think I've seen where coaches – you know, they announce that they're leaving, but then they coach through the whatever it is, either the conference championship game or, in this case, a potential high-end bowl game. But social media, Scott, makes everything – there's always additional nuances now when you add social media into the image, right? Because now, you know, information that's so reliable and it's so easily accessible gets released before he has the, you know, opportunity to announce it to the team and to the people that matter the most, right? So, you know, it's really hard to do things the right way when it's these types of announcements.
What kind of message do you think it sends to the college football playoff selection committee? Because, again, this is a coach of a team positioned to maybe get into that top four. They only have one loss, but he takes off for greener pastures. Do you think that they, when they release their rankings on Sunday night, their final rankings, they're going to also take into consideration that their own coach didn't maybe think they were playoff worthy?
Yeah, I mean, I don't doubt his intentions, right? Coach Kelly's intentions at all. I think he was there to win national championships, and we'd gotten to a point where we got into the playoffs and things just weren't, you know, didn't go our way for a couple of times. I do think the committee is going to consider Coach Kelly's departure. It's obviously very appropriate to do so, just because of how the team is going to, you know, there's so much questions and uncertainty around how the team's going to react to this you know, to the news and to him being gone off the sidelines, and then who's stepping in as an interim, or you know, he's obviously such a reliable source of leadership, right? So, I hope the committee understands that we're playing our best ball right now, and that we can go up against anybody. But definitely, they're going to consider Coach Kelly leaving.
What's it like playing for Brian Kelly? I mean, he's going to a place where the previous coach was Ed Orgeron. Coach O, he's up doing bicep curls and chugging Red Bulls at 5 in the morning. Very different personality. What's it like to play for a guy like Brian Kelly, and how much of an adjustment will it be for those guys at LSU?
Yeah, he's a CEO. He is a chief executive officer of a program, and he's going to run his program how any S&P 500 company is being run. And the guy's got to get in line, and it's going to be more so like a Alabama type of program in the SEC. And that's how, you know, I think some of these guys are going to have to adjust quickly, or they're just not going to be able to participate in what's going on in the program. So, it's cut and dry, and he does things his way, and his way has been very effective and has been working for him for over 30 years now. So he understands what he's doing, right? And he's been in different environments. So I don't have any doubts that he's going to be able to adjust, but it's on the, you know, on the athletes to go in and accept the change.
We're joined by former Notre Dame quarterback Brandon Wimbush. You can follow him on Twitter at WimbushB7. And, Brandon, how hard is it to be the head coach at Notre Dame? He was there for 12 years. He's the winningest coach in school history. That in and of itself is an extraordinary accomplishment, but it's especially extraordinary when you look at the tenure of the coaches that preceded him, the Bob Davies of the world, the Tyrone Willinghams, Charlie Weisses. Those guys were presumably good coaches, but they couldn't cut it. What did Brian Kelly do that enabled him to succeed, and how hard was it?
He had great people around him, and he'll say that. He'll be the first to say that. He had a great training staff. He had a great great assistants. He had great people in the recruiting department. And then that all leads down and trickles down, right? He had great leadership in Jack Swarbrick and President Father John. And that all trickles down to the players and how they receive the leadership, right, that they're surrounded by. But it's really hard. It's really hard to be a coach at Notre Dame. It's really hard to be a coach at Stanford and at Duke and at Northwestern. And the reason I pinpoint those schools is because of the academic rigor and standards that you have to abide by, right, to recruit and go out to recruit these players. And, you know, one stat, Scott, that always kind of, you know, opens my eyes is that we're only able to recruit like one-third, if that, of the top ESPN 300 coming out of high school just because of the academic standards. So that dwindles us down from the jump, right, and our ability to recruit and stay on par with the talent across the country.
Do you think Notre Dame is a destination job, or are there such things as destination jobs anymore?
Yeah, I think Notre Dame is that spot. I think you get to compete with the best. And your job is tougher, and you're challenged a little bit more. And you have to win national championships. That's the standard. And so I think we're going to see who's next in line to hold the position of head coach there. Whoever it is up for the challenge. And I'm excited for whoever's next. But it's definitely a destination job that a lot of people are excited to be even considered for.
Brandon, you're a very industrious young man, an entrepreneur, a guy who's gone on to have success after playing football at Notre Dame. And I would name you athletic director right now if Jack Swarbrick was to step away. If he were to step aside, I'd say, Brandon Wimbush, you take over. You got this, dude. So if Brandon Wimbush, if Brandon Wimbush is the athletic director at Notre Dame, who does he have on his list of candidates? Who is he looking at, or what is he looking at when it comes to filling the head coach position?
I'm looking for familiarity and someone who's done it at a high level, who's been a head coach before, and potentially even internally. I think there's a couple great candidates that are, that's in the program currently that I think could do a really good job and be very effective at leading this program and leading this current team to where I know they can go and where they should be at the end of this year. And Notre Dame is a place where, you know, you have to be more than a head coach. You have to be a CEO. You have to go out and raise money. You have to facilitate those donor conversations. You have to recruit. You have to do a lot of extra activities and be a bigger icon than just a head coach, right? So there's a lot on the plate for whoever's next in line.
Joined by former Notre Dame quarterback Brandon Wimbush. And Brandon, one of the topics that has dominated headlines this year with regards to college athletics has been the emergence of name, image, likeness. Players can now make money by endorsing products, services, and whatnot. And I know that you've started a company called Mogul. You are out there mining those opportunities for these athletes. But you're not just doing revenue sports, right? You're out there helping the golfers and the tennis players and the track stars of the world get a little extra income.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Scott. That's what we're really most proud of, to be honest, is that there's opportunities for everybody, not just the Trevor Lawrences or the Sam Howells of the world, right? That there's value to be driven by all athletes, right? There's 500,000 athletes, and there's value within all of these men and women across the country. So that's been our hypothesis, our thesis coming into this. And ever since July 1, where, you know, obviously legislation went into effect, I think 85 to 90% of our deals that have been driven through our platform have been facilitated for non-revenue generating sports.
What's the most interesting opportunity that you've helped connect an athlete with?
We've had many. I think the most interesting one has to be a podcast that is really doing really well. We had Darian Wrencher, running back in your area from Clemson, who has been very active with NIL, and we connected him to Embassy Row, who does Good Morning Football, and they do men in suits or soccer or something like that. But they have a bunch of podcast networks and television shows, and they're really successful. And we partnered Darian with Embassy Row to launch his own podcast, which he's been just doing incredibly at, and it's been very successful.
How many athletes do you have right now enlisted in your program?
So we have 3,500 in our database, and we have about 1,500 that have actively signed up, have their profile updated, and are very engaged with the platform.
Okay, so I'm an athlete. I'm playing golf at Coastal Carolina or something like that. I go to your platform. I sign up. You're going to help me find opportunities. Can you work me through the process both during the hookup, I guess, or whatever, the connection with the opportunity, and what you do to help me make sure that everybody lives up to their obligations?
Yes. So quickly, Scott, the brand signs up. Let's say it's Dick's Sporting Goods. They sign up to Mogul. They join the platform. They can post opportunities for athletes to apply to, right? So opportunities could be autograph signings, social media campaigns, or brand ambassador programs, right? You name it. Those opportunities are posted by brands like Dick's Sporting Goods, and then they go out and either invite specific athletes that they want to work with that are on our platform, or they can await applications from athletes. So an athlete can apply. They say, oh, I see Dick's Sporting Goods is paying me $500 to do an autograph signing for an hour. I like that opportunity. I'm going to apply to it. And then that contract that the athlete reads, right, that's posted by Dick's Sporting Goods, is automatically generated through the platform. And then there's a whole compliance component that we're very weary of, that we want to keep our athletes eligible. But that contract is on the platform, and it's obviously signed by both parties to proceed with the engagement. So they're bound by the contract, right? And, it's supposed to be a hands-off process, but we're always here. We have a customer success manager. I'm in the position to help all the athletes make sure that they're not taken advantage of. And then we vet all of our businesses and brands as well as our athletes. So we make sure that the brands that are joining the platform aren't in industry prohibited industries within the NCAA rules, right? So athletes know that they're working with verified brands.
I like it. Excellent stuff from Brandon Wimbush. You can follow him on Twitter at WimbushB7. Brandon, buddy, appreciate you coming on this morning. Have a good week.
Yeah, thanks so much. Take care.
Thanks. It's Brandon Wimbush joining us on the Saitama Hotline. It is